Hey, hey, this is the Coffee and Technology Podcast brought to you by Cropster. Today we have the pleasure of speaking with Sue Yagmodi, a founder of Driftway Coffee. Driftway Coffee is Brooklyn-based and is a market leader in coffee subscriptions and virtual tastings. Suyog brings a true understanding of the importance of data collection and data protection in the coffee industry. Listen and learn as we dig deeper into the world of data and coffee subscriptions. And don't forget to follow and like this podcast on your preferred podcast platform. And be sure to follow us on social media at Cropster. Welcome, Suyog. Norbert, welcome back. Suyog, it's really cool to have you, man. How's it going?
It's going great. How are you? Great to be here.
Thank you, yeah. You're in Amsterdam right now, right?
Yeah, I'm traveling for a few weeks. I have some family that lives here, so we're just like staying with them and working from here. Then taking a little bit of time off, catch some sun, like in Southern Europe. Hopefully, it's been a yeah. Crazy year, and just like last year, like just different, but it's been a busy year. So everybody's taking some time off and trying to do the same before the end of the year starts.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. No, so normally you're not based in Europe, obviously. You're based in Brooklyn, if I'm not mistaken, or New York?
Yeah. Both me and also Driftway, we're completely based out of Brooklyn. We have a lot of remote workers. Even within Brooklyn, there's people that like work remotely. But the production and sort of everything that's physically needed for operations and production is in Brooklyn, New York.
Nice. No, that's cool. Maybe you could tell us a little bit more about Driftway, what your motivation to start that was. I know it's a pretty big subscription service now, so love to hear more about that.
Yeah. So Driftway Coffee is direct-to-consumer coffee roaster. Initially, we started in just selling subscriptions. But we've sort of evolved a little bit, and I'll talk a little bit more later about like the more assortment of products that we've built beyond subscriptions. But yeah, we started in 2014 in our home kitchen, roasting coffee on a Bemore. If I'm sure everybody's familiar, people that listen to roasting software podcast will know. But it's like a microwave roaster that does a little fake cylindrical action. In my opinion, fake cylindrical action. But I've roasted thousands of batches on a Bemore. In fact, there was a time when we had to scale up, and we ended up getting a second Bemore because we were like, oh, we'll be twice as fast. That's just a little tidbit of how we started. But essentially, the reason we started Driftway was before the Driftway, my partner and I, who are the two founders, and we still work on Driftway full time, we used to live in London. We had access to really quickly delivered freshly roasted coffee in the mail. Like literally, you'd order it by 3 o'clock and it would show up the next morning. UK is a really small country. It's possible to do that fairly easily. We got spoiled by that. We got spoiled by specialty beans. We were improving our coffee consumption at home, both like switching to a grinder, switching to a better machine, switching to pour over setups. I read Michelle Wiseman's book, God in a Cup, around that time, and I kind of really, really got into it. When we moved to New York, back in 2013, we had access to a lot of good cafes nearby that had access, you know, to good beans. Stumptown Intelligentsia was sort of that was like their peak. I would say that was like when they were really flourishing and starting to spawn off some of this what are now more smaller roasters. And what we found is that we couldn't get access to the same speed and freshness and quality of beans that we had access to in London. So it was either, you know, cafes had less fresh roasted coffee, or grocery stores, obviously, even now it's very difficult to find fresh coffee. And then we tried a couple of subscription services. Many of them were good, but it was hard to get the type of coffee that you would like all the time. You always had a roaster's choice situation going on. It was all sort of early days for subscriptions as well. So around the same time, my partner Anu, she wanted to start working in like nonprofit or something that was like a little bit more of our own. Before that, we were working in a marketing tech company, marketing consulting company that became a creative agency and an ad agency eventually. Mm-hmm. When these two things came together, we're like, oh, we should just, you know, start doing something on the side. And so we put together a little website on Squarespace originally, mm-hmm. I want to say.
Nice.
And then added a recurring billing plugin at some point where you get like a private URL and you can pay for a subscription. And mm-hmm. It was like November 2013. We're like, oh, obviously people are going to come and buy. And one of those like build it and they will show up, they will come feelings. Mm-hmm. Obviously that didn't happen. You know, reality hits you very quickly on that front. We started an Etsy store, which we still operate, which we really enjoy. And you know, Etsy's got some challenges, but it feels like a very organic and good place where people purchase mm-hmm. certain types of things. It's not clearly not for coffee as much as it is for many other things, but we have sort of a nostalgic connection to it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, essentially we started because we wanted to create something and we wanted to find coffee that was good and fresh and specialty for ourselves. And now about 7 years, coming up on 7 years this year, Driftaway has grown quite a bit, both in terms of the volume and impact, but also transformed a little bit in terms of the things that we care about and the mission that we are trying to go after, and also the team and sort of the people that we are working with to make it even better as we go.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That was a long answer. Hopefully that's
No, okay. That's fantastic. That's exactly those type of stories we are looking for. And, I can relate very much to many of your things you said, building a company myself or with our team, of course. As you said, you know, you build something and of course in your head it works, but the world out there doesn't immediately know about it or respond to it. And I also find it quite very interesting that you use Etsy as a coffee store. I've never thought about that. I always think of like handcraft things on Etsy, and I like it very much. But kudos to you. This is cool to have your own like coffee store there.
Yeah, it's not our only. It's definitely not our main. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like selling channel. We mostly sell on our website, but it's sort of a place where, you know, if you organically get found, then people will come to you directly as well.
Right, right.
So maybe also tell us a little bit about, too. I mean, by the way, amazing story. I love to hear that. But I know you've mentioned too to us that you do a lot of virtual tastings. To me, that's been really fascinating, especially during the pandemic where we can't meet mm-hmm. in person and everything's gone virtual. I really love to know how that came about. Was that a pre-pandemic thing or did that happen during the pandemic, and how you've been able to turn that idea to monetize it into a part of your business model?
Yeah. I think education has been something that we've wanted to focus on and sort of done. I'd say like we've put a decent amount of emphasis on. Every time we want to see like how do we sort of get the, you know, sort of the customers are coming to a specialty coffee anyway. The question is how do you bring them along and sort of expand that pool. And education is educating customers about like using a grinder, what is peaberry coffee, how do you roast coffee, like those types of things has always been a goal and a commitment from our side. I think, you know, in sort of the starting like a company journey, some things work out really well right from the beginning and some things just don't. And you just keep it in your head, and every time like some sort of forces come together, in this case, likely the pandemic, not the best force you want, but it did happen, you know. So the reality of that was that we've tried sort of coffee concierge concepts in the past, and I think a lot of other people have as well, a lot of other roasters, to like connect with customers on education. Text message, video calls directly with, you know, subscribers, those types of things, never really stuck and sort of scaled in an appropriate way. And so bringing this around to virtual tastings and sort of virtual education in general, when the pandemic started, first few months, we were just like, are we even going to stay open? Because everything kind of felt like it's kind of like, what's the point? But once we were able to get past that, we actually saw increased demand because more of the coffee consumption was switching to home consumers. And then we brought on someone who we know in coffee from a very long time. In fact, James McCarthy, he actually educated us when we were getting into coffee ourselves. And we said that, nice. You know, it would be really cool if we can do coffee education through a virtual lens, because for holiday season last year, people were not going to be meeting friends and family as much as they would normally do. And gifting is a big part of what we do at Driftway Coffee Gifts. So related to that, we started working on a script for virtual tasting. We've always had in our product portfolio a Explorer kit, which is four different coffees, different from different parts of the world, roasted differently. And that's just the first delivery in every subscription. So it just made sense that you would taste those coffees side by side in an assisted way virtually with our educator, James, leading you. So essentially, you know, we worked on it for a little bit. We sort of, you know, perfected the script, and we borrowed a lot of concepts from cupping, minus the quality control components, like the negative stuff, because here we're looking for like differences rather than, you know, a score. And yeah, that's basically how it started. So it definitely a pandemic era evolution. But I'd say, you know, it's something that it's been in our mind as a principle and as a goal, but it just kind of came together more quickly because of the pandemic last year. I think we launched it October 2020, so it's not even been a year. We've done something like 300, 400 tastings across 3,000-4,000 people. Many of them are home consumers. But increasingly, it is more work from home groups of corporate customers. And so it's been really, honestly, that was a little surprising for us, because we just thought that it was going to be like, you know, person plus like a couple of family members in different parts of the same city, even, or sometimes like nearby. But we just thought it would be like very intimate, small groups, 3-4 people, 10 people tops. We had a cap on it in the beginning, that no more than 9 allowed. And now, you know, over time, we realize that it's actually not a big deal. Like, people just know how to use Zoom. They just know how to use all the technology platforms more easily. So we've done even like 300-person tastings.
Oh, wow, that's amazing. So, can you explain this just quickly? How does it work? So people come together on Zoom, and then they all have the coffees in front of them?
So
what's the experience?
Yeah, we use a virtual sort of booking software that's connected to our website. So you can essentially book a time and a date and time, which is connected to the calendar of our educators. And when someone signs up, you also put in all your shipping information. Everything is at the very minimum 2 weeks out, so that it gives us enough time to ship coffees, freshly roasted coffees shipped. And then once you book it, you basically get a calendar invite, a pre-event email. You can also gift it as a, if you don't know when you want to schedule it, you can gift it as a concept, and then someone can contact us and like schedule it later. But that's the first offering we started with, was just the side-by-side tasting. And then after that, we've added brewing classes, you know, a couple other sort of pour over classes and a few other options as well, which people individually sign up for.
So the participants get a whole bean coffee, and then they have to have infrastructure at home to grind and to brew.
Yeah. So we started with whole beans only, but then we added an option to do ground coffee mm-hmm. once we were able to figure out how to vacuum seal the tasting packs. Mm-hmm. So we do have an option for both now. Honestly, like, it's a little bit of a struggle in terms of our internal decision, because we're like, we don't want to send ground coffee. It's not going to taste the same. We did a bunch of tastings and testing mm-hmm. Internally, and we're like, you know, obviously it doesn't taste as good as whole beans, but relative to not being able to taste them or sort of answering a different question, can you still perceive the differences between the coffees mm-hmm. and at what point does the quality drop off? So we just kind of like played with a few different variables, try to like be very aggressive on the shipping time so that people get the coffee right away. It's also mm-hmm. vacuum sealed so that when you open it, it's instantly into the cupping glass or the tasting glass, and then you're immediately drinking it. So there's a little bit of degradation, but we do include ground coffee as well.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
It's awesome. And one thing that makes you think of is a lot of this comes down to the idea of creating a personalized experience and personalization. So I'm wondering, from you and your partner's background in marketing, you're essentially selling a subscription service. So what are some of the differences or levels of importances when the idea of personalization comes into place, when you're trying to get people to do some virtual tastings with you or selling, or even getting them to sign up for your subscription? You know, how important is that versus just selling normal retail bags?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, when we were first starting out, one of the things that we did was we picked up the Lean Startup book and tried to, like, we wanted to do the whole thing from beginning to end, sourcing coffee, green coffee, roasting, designing all the e-commerce components, customer support, mm-hmm. shipping, operations, etc. But we had to stub out a bunch of things, and we said, fine, let's just assume we'll buy green coffee from Sweet Maria, as you can only get better, like, in terms of volume. Let's assume certain things and let's just sort of move on. But one of the things we did in the test was we recruited some friends and family to try out coffees from other roasters. We weren't roasting ourselves. We just bought some bags, rebagged them, and started sending them to people. One thing mm-hmm. that we discovered as a really huge insight, and honestly still drives our business model to this day, is that people have a perception of quality based on what they want to be, you know, they want to sound like a connoisseur, but in reality, the habits of what they drink is very real and much more taste-based. So mm-hmm. the more specific example of that is, like, if I give you a quiz to fill out online, you're likely to pick things that sound cool and unique and interesting. Whereas when you actually taste it, you're going to be like, oh, I don't really like this coffee. We sent coffee to an extremely trained chef, and mm-hmm. what they liked was completely different from what we expected them to like, and what they even said that they would like. So then we sort of, a step two of that test was to send small quantities of multiple coffees that tasted different. And essentially from that, we realized that, you know what, if we just map to we take off, like, we don't do any online quiz or screening situation at all. The first thing that you experience from us is actual coffees you taste on your own time. And then based on what you like, we personalize so that we are sending you coffees that you will like, that you've tasted mm-hmm. yourself. So as an example, if you end up telling us that you like light roasted Ethiopian coffee, it's likely that you're going to like a light roasted Kenyan, Rwanda, Burundi, like more of the similar origins, similar sort of taste profile. So that's the personalization that we do. Our subscription system has essentially four coffees every 4 weeks. It's very dynamic from a operations and roasting standpoint, but it's also, very interesting for a customer. So it's possible that even if you like only one profile of coffee, you're not going to get the same one, but you're going to get something very similar. And so from a personalization standpoint, you're getting something unique to discover. At the same time, you're not going to get something that is not in your taste profile. So you're going to always enjoy the coffee that you get. Now, we don't get it right 100%, but we get it right more than other people do, for sure. And we have lower churn because of that, which is honestly, from a business metric standpoint, that's like the number one thing that drives your subscription. So it's more confused people, essentially.
It's fascinating. I love your approach, and I think you've put a lot of thought and a lot of hard work behind all the framework you're describing. Because it's a lot of those questions I have in my head, and I experience as we talk to roasters, or visit roasters. I'm in the coffee industry now for almost 20 years in different aspects. So I've tasted quite a bit, and sometimes it's exciting to taste something just for the sake of it. But as you say, sometimes this is not what you want to drink every day. And the same goes with restaurants. I love to go out. I love to explore. I love to travel, right? I go to other places. And then sometimes when I come back, I feel like, I just want some simple food for a few days. Just something very, very easy and makes me happy. But both makes me happy. Also the experience of something different. Because it pushes the boundaries a little bit.
Yeah.
So I like what I hear. And I think that's from a consumer perspective, you're very close to them, to what they need and want.
Yeah.
And not so much pushing your own agenda on what you think the world should look like. But at the same time, it's both a little bit, right? You push a little bit, but you also give.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it kind of comes down to incremental change. If you just try to like shock someone with something that's very new and interesting, it works for some people, but most people I imagine work with incremental change. Like it's taken us about 3 years to convince our parents to drink our coffee. Like it's kind of embarrassing, honestly, but you want the change to stick, right? Like if you just force it, they may say that they're drinking Driftway, but they may not actually drink it. But we've slowly, through sort of soft persuasion and then obviously showing them and upgrading their equipment and whatnot, we've converted them from like instant eons ago brands to like actually using fresh beans. It takes time. It's worth it, but it takes time.
Absolutely. I have the same experience with my friends and family, and we did an experiment about 15 years ago in a factory cafeteria in Colombia. So 15 years ago, the specialty concept was not that known for Colombians in country. So they had some had access, but more in the bigger cities and more the upper class maybe. So we went consciously into a factory cafeteria where those people would love to drink coffee, but not know what they're drinking. And they wouldn't, from our perspective, maybe not even care. So we took away their coffee they had before. We replaced it with specialty coffee. And the initial reaction was, oh my God, that coffee is different. What's going on? So they noticed it, that something was different. They were not saying, oh, this is good. This is great. No, this is like, oh, this is different. And different was intimidating and not that great. But then they got over it because it's like, there's nothing they would want to do about it. It's coffee's coffee, and it's free, and it's in the cafeteria. So whatever. After 2 months, we switched it back to the old coffee, and that's where we got the reaction of like, "Oh my God, this coffee is so bad! What's going on?" So they noticed it only over time that they actually had the better things in their cup, and that's an experience I get a lot from friends. So, I give them or bring them coffees, and then after a while, it's like, no, but you spoiled me. Now I can't go back. What have you done?
Well, that's literally my experience too. When I first started drinking coffee, I would do vanilla powder, sugar, chocolate powder, cinnamon, and then creamer. And then I was like, okay, I can't keep doing this. So I started incrementally taking out those things, and I worked my way to black coffee. But at the time, it was commercial black coffee, like Danner coffee kind of stuff. And then when I started getting into specialty before I started working, maybe like 3-4 years ago, I really started really drinking a lot of specialty. And the more specialty coffee I drank, every time then I would go for like a last minute like coffee that I needed or an emergency coffee at a diner, I couldn't drink it. My palate couldn't handle it. Like I literally just would rather just suck it up with no coffee than drink it. I just couldn't do it anymore because like my palate got so used to high quality coffee. So that's interesting. You have that experience, Norbert.
This also goes back to the education space. Like lots of people mm-hmm. will ask us, especially in the virtual tastings, because it's, you know, even though you're trying to focus on the tasting, the questions are about coffees, all types of questions, anything and everything, you know, from everything from like asking the educator, like, what's your favorite coffee? Have you been to a farm? You know, all sorts of questions are fair game. But the one that gets asked the most, and we've taken a little bit of time to like craft a really diplomatic response, is should I drink this coffee black or can I add milk and creamer to it? You know, it's a very basic question. Obviously, people will do whatever they want to do, but we've taken time to say something very specific that is like, you know what? I think you should drink it the way you enjoy it, but I would highly recommend trying one sip black, only one sip, yeah. No more. In fact, don't even try more than one to begin with. And, you know, some people will commit and really enjoy and like slowly start their journey, but you just want to give them that one nudge and then mm-hmm. see where it goes. Like everybody's going to have their own experience and own journey.
I totally agree. I have, that's exactly the same. I think many years ago, I would be more hardcore coffee hipster. And it's like, no, this is black. You cannot like, you destroy it. If you put anything else in it, you disrespect it. And, you know, I've come also from that perspective a long way, I think, to, as you say, recommend and ease them in. And ultimately, you know, it's their taste experience, it's their coffee experience. And if that coffee experience needs some sugar and some milk, so be it. I myself sometimes try to put some sugar in. It's like, because people do it, I love sugar, I love sweets. And whenever I do it, I always feel like, no, this is it's always a mistake. It's like, it for me, it just doesn't go with coffee. I don't want it. I don't want sugar in there. But, you know, sometimes I feel, especially when I'm traveling and I, you know, it's some diner coffee. It's like, oh, let's see. Well, that's how a lot of people drink it. So maybe it's good and it's not for me. But anyway.
Like what you've heard so far? This podcast is brought to you by Cropster, a software solution that connects coffee professionals from origin to roasteries and cafes around the world. Whether you produce, trade, roast, or brew coffee, Cropster products will help your business take that next step.
Theo, can we shift it a little bit over to the technology side? Because
let's go.
I hear a lot of data is in play when you talk about your business. So you manage all the quality feedbacks, so the preferences, the taste profiles, of course, all the ordering and the logistics aspect of it. What do you can you tell us a little bit about it? What that means to your business, I don't know what systems you might use or how this all came about.
So we use WooCommerce, which is based on WordPress. Fairly common, often sort of chided for not having the best performance, but very flexible. So, right. You know, we're basically able to do a lot of things with minimum or like some amount of developer effort. So that's basically like the engine that supports everything. On the data side of things, you know, I think what we tend to focus on the most is making sure that you balance the data side of things with a multi-level user experience. Ultimately, you know, we are B2C, like, or D2C also, you know, in more current terms. So customers sometimes want to engage on just a very simple level. They just want to say yes or no, you know, if they like a coffee or not. Sometimes people want to say yes, but this is a 84 out of 100. And I find these notes in it. I find, you know, this is sort of the detailed feedback for a coffee. So we allow people to do that. And we basically use a lot of that data to inform what we're selecting. Now it's been enough time that most of our green selection is based on scores and confirmation of existing coffees that we carried in the past. Sometimes logistics come in the way, so we have to like be flexible. Especially in this past year, it's been more complicated. But for the most part, we are trying to buy the same coffees year over year, as long as the ratings are high and continue to remain high, or they get better, or if they're getting worse, also like how much worse. So we use the, our data to inform that. We use, in addition, sort of to rating just the coffees from the initial kit. You can rate all the coffees that you get over time. We have some customers that have been around for like 6 years, 7 years since the very beginning. And so they've rated about 350 different roasts, potentially. And so we use that data to like inform what we're going to send them the next time. So that's essentially like a tool that we've built custom in-house that, you know, we import all the orders, click a button, and everybody gets a coffee assigned. And with some exceptions. So essentially we use all of the processing, orders and fulfillment component of it is based on ratings and reviews and data that people have. And then I think the one thing that we took a trip to, Costa Rica, Guatemala, sort of a origin trip. Honestly, we don't travel much to origin because we have too many different types of coffees to buy. And even historically, we just felt like it was more of a, you know, marketing ploy to take a bunch of photos. So, but we did do a couple of trips and, you know, one of them, we try to like understand from the producers and the farmers, like what is it that you want? You know, obviously there's the transactional money component of it, which, is there. The second thing everybody wanted, and nobody asks for this explicitly, but it felt like they just want like more stability. So if you can commit to longer term, then that's something that allows them to stop worrying about the basics and worry about improvements and expansion and things. I mean, that's what you want them to do as well. You don't want, you know, just, we don't want us to grow ourselves. We also want everybody else to grow with us. And the third thing that was very explicit that they wanted, and this is where a lot of the data comes into play, is, you know, it's a very simple question, but they everybody asked, every single one. We met like five or six different groups of farmers, including some co-ops and stuff, and everybody asks like, what did you think of this coffee? And I mean, it's a big heavy question, like there's so many ways to answer it. And so when we've finished that trip, we came back, we were like, you know, we really have a lot of information that we're sitting on that we should share with the farmer. It just sort of closes the feedback loop. Now, whether they're able to do anything with or not is actually a question that we, you know, ask ourselves a lot. But at the very minimum, we're just sharing information and hopefully that converts to knowledge. So what we do is we take all the ratings, reviews. We also have like specific farmer feedback fields that we collect from our customers and subscribers. So as you're rating coffee, you can choose to send more feedback to the farmers directly. And then we collect that, we report it back to, you know, we send it back to the importers or to the farmers if we're in touch with them directly, basically as far back in the supply chain as we can. Initially, we thought that it would be very useful for them to like do crop planning, but honestly, I am not a farmer. I don't really know how it can be used or it could be used at all. At the very minimum, we're trying to answer that question, like, what did you think of this coffee? Here's some data points from like thousands of people, not like one person, not like one cupper.
That's amazing. That's such a unique opportunity you have here. And as you said, I think it's maybe initially not fully clear what can you do with the data, and will it become actionable or some like get to the higher level into the knowledge area. But it also shows a certain amount of respect and communication and like a linkage, which we're trying to establish so hard. I think there's such a need and a desire from consumers to understand where things come from.
Yeah.
So we see more information about farmers and to expose the farmer a little bit more towards consumers. So it's also quite an honest move to do the same vice versa.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same goes for consumers. If you know the farm name and the farmer's face and the altitude, I mean, what is the action you take? Maybe there's no conscious action we can take, right? I hear you, Sjoerd. I'm an IT guy by training, and you know we work in databases and we work in tables, and we would like to make sense of certain things. But sometimes it's just a feeling of being connected.
Yeah,
and I think that feeling we have for the consumers, so they feel connected to their products, so that you know there's more loyalty there, there's more engagement. And the same would go for the farmer if they get to know a little bit their consumers and feel, you know, it goes a long way. And it's hard life on the farm, knowing that your product is appreciated, that there's people thinking about it. If it's positive or negative, and I guess it's positive more than negative.
Yeah,
it uplifts their day, and if that alone happens, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah,
I think you can make a huge difference.
Yeah, that's the intent. I think the other thing that I've noticed is that there is a feeling of like us and them are like separate entities that can't necessarily communicate unless you work through the supply chain. And especially with like smartphones proliferation everywhere in the world, like literally everywhere, including like, you know, 1900 meter high mountains in coffee growing countries all over Central, South America, Africa, everywhere. Literally everyone is connected. So the choice at this point is not whether you can communicate with them, but whether you want to. And I think one of the barriers that we are trying to break down is like to try to reach the farmers more directly. Now, we don't want to be interruptive, like everybody has work to do and businesses to run and lots of like lives to live. But from at least like the excuse to like, oh, I can't reach them because they are unreachable, that excuse is not valid anymore. And so we're trying to like make sure that we don't hide behind that and at least do the do the bits that we can and communicate with them directly. I mean, I have a few people that I contact with on text message, like producers in Colombia, like you just, it's just like a normal relationship. Like it's like having a friend next door and you just say, hey, what do you think of this coffee? Like, hey, how's the, you know, what's going on with the harvest? Like, oh, there's like riots going on in Bogota. So there's this other issue going on. And so everything's going to be delayed. Easy, right? Like it's just basic communication and it's not that difficult anymore. Literally, you can just text someone. So like those barriers are like mentally starting to break down. And then in reality, hopefully will lead to like better communication in two directions, not just one direction.
Can you see that as a next step for your platform to have your customers chat or interact directly with the farmer?
Yeah, we've done we do this maybe not fully quite yet, but we've been doing on and off Instagram Live interviews with farm managers, or you know, in some cases, like we buy a decent amount of coffee from Caravela, who run like these QC labs in, you know, very close to origin. So with the, you know, people that work there, and we ask them about the lots that we're buying, and like, you know, and then obviously it's Instagram Live, so you can, as a consumer, join and ask a question, stuff like that. I honestly, not that many people engage because I think we haven't nailed the format or the timing, or we just don't have the scale quite yet. But I think it's promising because it's essentially your way to connect with a farmer.
You're right.
So I'm curious. So you obviously, your for producers in origin, working with someone like you, the transparency is there and the access is there to that, to the data you make available. But I'm curious to know what other opportunities, you know, there are or ways, you know, with for producers that work with specifically, you know, buyers like you, subscription services, you know, what other opportunities are there to strengthen the relationships? I mean, is it as simple as just the fact that you having a subscription service, you have a more fixed revenue that can allow you then to make more commitments in buying from producers on a long-term scale? I mean, what is that? What do those opportunities look like?
A couple of thoughts come to mind. I'm not sure if I have a good answer for this, but one thing is buying more coffee from the same people, multiple lots, different. Everybody has multiple slots to fill as a roaster. Some things are super unique and interesting. Some things are, you know, regional blends or like more of a mix. So that's one of the things that we are working on, is to have like different profiles of coffee from the same farms, from the same producers. So just more volume. It's actually common sense in a basic way. Like, it just makes sense to reduce your risk by working with fewer people. But, you know, that's not the only reason we do it. We do it because we want to buy more coffees from the same people so that we can support them more. Not just the best, fanciest small lots, but also like the more common basic lots. I think on the consumer side, definitely subscriptions, and more specifically like prepaying for a subscription either as a gift or for yourself, is a big commitment that you can make to us, and therefore we can make to producers, green, you know, importers, everyone sort of we work with. So we definitely highly encourage that on all levels without, you know, forcing people into it. A few years ago, even maybe 3-4 years ago, we were mostly buying spot, a little bit like repeat spot, which is kind of a strange system, but still kind of works, especially for really large lots. Over the last few years, we've converted to almost buying no spot. Maybe, you know, if some issues happen, maybe 10% or less of our coffee, fewer of our coffees are spot. So we are just committing more to farmers because we can, and we know how much we're going to need. So we have like a forecasting system in place that has already mapped out for the next 9 months how much coffee we're going to need. It allows us to be seasonal as well. Like, something that lands immediately is transferred into a position, roasted, shipped to customers. So like, we're able to be more dynamic with it because we know exactly how much we need, when we need it, and then we're able to use it quickly. Mm-hmm. A lot of these promises are filled by like other roasters in different ways. Like, I know people like air freight green coffee sometimes. I think it's questionable whether it's worth it or not. But it's the idea is that to use green quickly. And so we're trying to do that too.
Yeah. No, for sure. And that's really interesting. So it makes me think of another question on the technology side. I'm wondering, so you have all this data from your consumers that you pass on to, that you can pass on to your producers. As you continue to grow and scale, I'm wondering what some of the like technological challenges that you have faced in the past or may continue to face, what those are in terms of being able to support an infrastructure to hold all that data and, you know, create something to continue to build on that data. You know, is it just simply being able to finance developers, or are there other little things that that make that a difficulty?
Yeah. So the one challenge that we face that is now, in hindsight, it's embarrassing, but in it is very real. Every year in the holiday season, we sell a lot of thousands of coffee gifts, which are essentially subscriptions. So an average one is like a 6-month monthly subscription. So, you know, I will give you a gift that you will then set up and use for the next 6 months. And then this year it did not happen because we were prepared for it, but at least a couple of times in the past, in January, the site crashes in the middle of the night because all these people have, all the gift receivers have sort of set up their subscriptions, and all of these subscriptions generate orders. It's like it's a basic infrastructure problem. But it's happened a bunch of times because we don't know what the next level of scale is. And so I think we've solved it now because, you know, optimization from a performance standpoint is just very, very critical. We have a person on staff that is just like spends most of their time dedicated to doing that. But, you know, I think that's like a that's just a challenge that we just actively consider and think about. I think we are starting to wonder a little bit. Our product offerings and portfolio has always been focused on the younger audience in terms of the target audience. 25, 44, you know, in terms of like a marketing demographic. And but we've been ignoring or not addressing an older audience and an even younger audience. So how do we do that? By, you know, either expanding the portfolio of products. So that's something that we're thinking about. And this is all based on data in terms of like feedback from the customers. Another like feedback area from a data standpoint is churn. So we obviously focus quite a bit on reducing churn, but the number one reason that people cancel, and this is a real problem for every single subscription company, not just in coffee, but in general, is the number one reason people cancel is cost. So like how do we either introduce a secondary layer of coffees that are like less expensive, that will hold people in for longer? So like expanding the product portfolio, because at some point, you know, like the market is growing in terms of our addressable market for home consumers and especially coffee, but to grow it even further or to grow it even faster, we need to like modify our offerings a little bit. So that's something we're considering, especially for next year.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Nice. Well, no, thanks a lot, Soyeg. Well, super interesting what you're doing, and really, really exciting to have you on here, man. Appreciate it.
Very, very inspiring, Soyeg. I loved hearing your story and your history, and I think very good things will come from it. I'm a big believer in data, in you know, knowing or looking back in having a history or historical data sets, and then from that derive the future. Of course, it also needs creative ideas and a lot of trials and errors, as you know. But it informs you so much more. So yeah. And that's, I think, also one of the reasons we have built Cropster, because that was a big need in the coffee industry to have that opportunity to go back and replicate and learn. And, you know, not only from the human experience can change very, or the human thought of the past can change very quickly. It's very fragile. Suddenly you only think about the good things and forget about the bad, or, you know, you forget certain details which are not unimportant.
Yeah.
So having that heard from you again, like, hey, this is how you can build a business. Even if you start small, you start on a Beemor, you work very hard, you take risks, you know, it's fantastic. You always had this methodical approach, and like, let's put a concept down, let's think about it, let's take the next step. So I congratulate you to your success, and I wish you much more and many more customers and less churn and and more connections to producers and to within the coffee supply chain. That's very inspiring. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Norbert.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Coffee and Technology Podcast brought to you by Cropster. If you enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe or give us a follow on any of our channels to always get the latest episode. If you're interested in more educational content on all things coffee and tech, be sure to head to cropster.com/learn or visit our YouTube channel. Cheers to more coffee.